Honorable members, minister, deputy minister, acting DG, our team from parliament, the team of officials from Department of Public Works and Infrastructure, the guests, the media, and everyone who is part of our meeting today, good morning. We are meeting today to deal and get an update on the petition that was forwarded to us by the Parliament, and we received that as the committee on the 11th of December, on the issues that have been raised by the author of the petition. Secondly, we'll also be deliberating on our annual report as the committee. And then we adopt that annual report. Finally, we'll be dealing with the minutes that we of the previous meeting. We have been, as the country, I think there are signs. We were happy when the vaccine came, but there are signs that the numbers, though they are at a slow pace, they are starting to increase again. It means that we still have to continue staying indoors, so that we don't we are not infected by the virus, but we are also going to deal with the public hearing, which also means we have to seriously adhere to the health protocols as this committee. We hope that we will continue on the level that we are in, so that we deal with the public hearings, because people of South Africa, they're looking at the bill that we are bringing to them, which will repeal the Act of 1976, that talk of the expropriation. With those few words, honorable members, I welcome you to the committee. We will then, Ms. Martinez, if we have any apologies, could you present to them? Could you present them to the committee?
Thank you, Chairperson. Good morning to yourself, the honourable members, honourable DM, our colleagues, and the other colleagues from the department. We have a couple of apologies. One from the honourable Nimalo, who's attending another portfolio committee meeting, as well as the honourable Van Staden. He is also attending another portfolio committee meeting. I note another apology from the Minister Chair. She has sent an apology because she's attending a cabinet meeting. But the DM is here on her behalf. Thanks, Chair.
Thank you,
Ms.
Yes. Another apology from Honorable Mashele. He is attending a funeral. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Honorable Mjoba. And then the next item on the agenda, Mr. Tinita.
Chair, the next item on the agenda is that Mr. August, who's the petitioner, will share with, will just brief the committee on the actual petition. When we spoke to his office, we were advised that he's not going to be flighting any presentation. He's just going to be doing an oral presentation to that effect, and thereafter we'll have the department. Thanks, Chair.
Thank you, Ms. Martinez. Though I'm not sure, because when I was looking at the participants, I didn't see any Mr. January. Maybe
he is here, Chair.
He's using another device. We then invite Mr. January to do the presentation. Over to you, sir.
Good morning, Chairperson. Good morning, members. Let me first correct you, Chairperson. It's August, not January. You've got the months mixed up.
apologies, Mr. August. On our agenda, it's written, Mr. January. Can you correct that, Ms. Martinez? Apologies, Mr. August. Over to you.
Thank you, Chairperson. I also want to apologize for not putting on my video due to the bad signal. But Chairperson and honorable members, in our country of radical inequality, unemployment and poverty, the state provides critical important safety nets to the elderly, disabled and children in the form of social grants. Imagine for a moment that in order to qualify for these grants, citizens had to belong to a certain political party or be somehow related to a serving public representative. It is totally unthinkable, besides unconstitutional. Yet that is exactly the way another of the state's frontline poverty alleviation programs, the Expanded Public Works Program, is being manipulated across the country, Chairperson. The program has been retooled and enabled politicians to reward loyal members, supporters, friends and family members to the exclusion of everyone else. Vote for us or starve, they are effectively telling vulnerable citizens, more than 32% of whom are unemployed according to recent Stats SA numbers. Chair, we saw in the recent by-elections last year how political parties unashamedly targeted the people's most desperate for income in their communities with offers of temporary jobs to return for their votes. The Good Party resolved to launch its national petition for fairness, equality and integrity in the EPWP after receiving similar complaints from communities across the country. EPWP provides paid short to medium term work to individuals on EPWP designated projects within the framework of the EPWP Code of Good Practice, read together with the Ministerial Determination 4 of May 2012 in terms of Section 50 of the Basic Conditions of Employment Act. Chairperson, typically beneficiaries of the program are absorbed into the infrastructure, environment, culture and social sectors. Good's petition requested the Department of Public Works and Infrastructure, together with this portfolio committee, to consider a policy review aimed at ensuring compliance by all municipal, provincial and national government departments with the principles of fair and impartial allocations of EPWP opportunities. Chairperson and members, the policy review must specifically close down the possibilities of cadre deployment and the manipulation of opportunities by public representatives and political parties. The EPWP must be primarily repositioned as a poverty alleviation tool, not camouflaged as job creation. At the same time, it must seek to develop the skills and employability of participants, particularly the youth. It must provide equal opportunities to all members in the ranks of the unemployed with a review of the current living minimum wage within the program, how money is transferred to agencies like the IDT, and if it's performance-based. Chairperson, we received tens of thousands of signatures from good people across the country, not all of them good members and supporters. We submitted this petition to the Speaker's Office on the 24th November 2020. Our appeal is for government to walk the talk on the EPWP program. Each day we, as public reps, sit back and allow the manipulation of the program by political parties and officials, thus enabling it, we spit on the faces of the poor. When the EPWP program was initially adopted by the National Department of Public Works, it was launched under the theme, more jobs, better jobs, and decent work for all. What we actually have is a contradiction of our Constitution and Employment Equity Act. It is time to reevaluate what the program has achieved and how it may better contribute to loosening the grip of poverty and unemployment that is presently choking millions of our compatriots. With an election on the horizon, traditionally a period of heightened EPWP manipulation is a scramble for votes, and good appeals to the committee to tackle this matter with speed. It shouldn't matter which party we present. We have responsibilities as elected public representatives to re-establish the EPWP integrity. Thank you, Chairperson. We have seen that there's many issues throughout the country of corruption, and as explained by our Chairperson, we should really, and the request is that this portfolio committee speeds up the process to bring one system in place on all levels of government to ensure that each and every South African that's unemployed gets an equal opportunity for EPWP opportunities. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Mr. August. We won't ask questions now. We will then ask the department to present.
And good morning, Honourable Chairperson and Honourable Members. Good morning to the petitioner, Mr. August, as well as departmental and parliamentary officials present. A good morning to all. Allow me first, Chair, to appreciate the fact that Mr. August has seen it fit to raise this matter with the Portfolio Committee, as it is a matter at the heart of dealing with the high unemployment rate that our country is suffering from, but also it affords us an opportunity as leadership of the country to put our heads together in an effort to address one of the most vexing, if not the one vexing challenge of our country, which is unemployment. And it is true that when EPWP was conceptualized, it was at the heart of the rising unemployment rate, the rising poverty levels, and the country challenged with the livelihood of citizens. And the concept in itself was intended to, as he also correctly says, to alleviate poverty amongst all citizens of our country. Let me hasten to say that in any of our policies as government, having fought for the kind of constitution that we have, which encompasses principles of fairness, principles of justice, and in everything we do, we as government cannot act differently. We should act and be seen to act in a fair and a just manner. And we cannot run away from the fact that there has been cries across board around the issue of EPWP and how, especially at lower levels, it has been the system has been abused, and it is against that background that the Department of Public Works, which actually is not the employing body for every projects, but is more of a coordinating department for all those other departments as well as government entities that are implementing the EPWP programs. They do receive the allocations, and the Department of Public Works is the conduit for such allocations, especially for the non-state sector. And therefore, the department has seen it fit to ensure that whilst at the conceptualization of the idea of a expanded public works program, yes, there was some guidelines on how to implement it, but those kind guidelines are not enforceable. And it's against that background that at the beginning of this term, that is in around 2019, we did raise this as a challenge, and the department is now, as we speak, busy trying to review the policy. I won't go into the ins and outs of the process and the policy. That is going to be done by the acting DG together with his team. But mine was to more say, to appreciate the opportunity for us to talk about this very important program, which some of us would look at it as by the way, but on those whom or those who benefit from the program see the program as a lifesaver, if I could use that term. And therefore, I do want to hand over to the acting DG so that he takes us through the presentation that has been prepared by the department. We will come back, Honorable Chairperson, for responses after members have had the opportunity to engage with the presentation. But once again, thank you for the opportunity. Over to you, DG, through the Honorable Chair.
Thank you very much, Deputy Minister. Good morning, Chairperson, members of the committee. Mr. August, thank you very much for the opportunity. Chairperson, the Deputy Minister has given an elaborate background to this program and the role that we play. We have a number of interventions in place to ensure that this program is imbued with the necessary integrity, with the necessary due diligence, as well as the principles that require the expanded public works program to be conducted in a manner that provides equal opportunities to all. And some of the concerns expressed by Mr. August we can identify with, and our interventions are intended to guide and to provide direction to all public bodies, as the Deputy Minister correctly mentioned, that the program is a national program. It's conducted in all four corners of the country at the level of municipalities, the provincial governments, the national government, as well as in the non-state sector. And our role is to coordinate, to oversee, to direct, and to imbue the necessary level of integrity into the program. And in bringing about that particular intervention, we have a number of guidelines, in particular for this purpose, the recruitment guidelines. And I'd like to now call my colleagues. Carmen Joy Abrams will lead the presentation, and my colleagues will add when necessary. We also have a number of other colleagues from the Expanded Public Works Program present, and they will also complement to the presentation. Mm-hmm. But I'd like to ask Carmen Joy to come in and discuss the kind of interventions that we've put in place to guide this program to ensure it's an equal opportunity program, and that it has the necessary checks and balances and bells and whistles within the framework of the level of authority that we have over the program as the National Coordinating Department. Carmen Joy, over to you.
Thank you, Acting DG. Good morning, Chairperson of the Portfolio Committee. Good morning, members. Good morning, Deputy Minister, Acting DG, EPWP colleagues, the media, and also members of the Secretariat. As mentioned, this particular presentation is with regard, and Mr. August, good morning. This particular presentation is with regard to the petition that was received then on the 24th of November and tabled in terms of the ATC. On the 11th of December 2020, the petition was then referred to the National Assembly. The petition that was tabled then on the 24th of November. Mr. August then went through the petition this morning. I don't think we need to have to go through that part. And then the committee has identified the Public Works Department to be able to brief, in turn provide a briefing in relation to the recruitment of EPWP participants. Now, the EPWP is one of government's, let me just minimize, yeah. The EPWP is one of government's medium to long-term strategies aimed at reducing unemployment and poverty. And as the Deputy Minister has mentioned, it has come in since 2004. The idea is that it is an all-of-government program which involves all spheres of government, specifically all spheres of government as it relates to areas of infrastructure, environment, and culture, social sector, and the non-state sector. Government departments participate, as well as state-owned enterprises. Now, what we have picked up, and Mr. Sir August is correct, as ADG has mentioned, is that we have determined that there's a high demand, particularly in the context of unemployment, for the Expanded Public Works Program. And that has resulted also in its own challenges, particularly at the local and municipal sphere. And here we are recognizing that there were challenges of patronage in recruitment processes, inconsistency in the processes of recruiting participants, lack of transparency, and also poorly defined criteria and processes for selection of participants. So for us, it is important to recognize that these challenges will contribute to what we then see as the incorrect targeting of participants. And that can have the reputational damage, because the intention of the program is to be able to ensure that the poor benefit, the poor particularly because of their circumstances, that would benefit. They've been unemployed. The fact that the poor would be selected on the basis that they are close to projects, and that would be the determinant factor, and no other factors such as the challenges mentioned above. Now, what then happened was that the Public Works Department, as the coordinator, had to then engage in several engagements across all spheres, engaging provincial departments, municipalities, and taking their hand to be able to develop what we call then the EPWP recruitment guidelines. And that was a very lengthy process that we undertook in 2017. And we then worked with all of these colleagues to develop what we now have as the EPWP recruitment guidelines. And as Acting DG has mentioned, they are recruitment guidelines, and therefore the enforceability is a concern. However, we do see it as a continuum for us as the department, that one intervention will not be will be possible to address the issue, and that it's a series of interventions. And for us, the current focus is to be able to move these recruitment guidelines and address them in the key policy issues that Deputy Minister mentioned that we will be looking at and have started to look at, and then bring it forth for consideration to external stakeholders. But we are currently in the internal stakeholder phase. Now, in terms of the recruitment guidelines, as mentioned, it was extensively consulted, and ultimately then the Minister of Employment and Labour, particularly because of the context of labour law and the fact that the ministerial determination, which is a deviation of the Basic Conditions of Employment Act, resides with the Department of Employment and Labour. the Minister of Labour then signed off and approved these particular guidelines in December 2017. Now, when we started out the phase three of EPWP in 2014, we recognized that there were many EPWP programs, but as coordinators, it is important for us to ensure that that there is some form of uniformity, despite the fact that public employment programs vary. And what one would then be looking at is for universal principles to be espoused, which is that workers are to be recruited in a fair and transparent process across the many EPWP programs undertaken by many different departments. The adherence of the minimum wage, which is then law, and it is it's in the National Minimum Wage Act. It is a specific wage that is pegged in relation to the National Minimum Wage Act, and it is the Minister of Employment and Labour that will put out this particular act in relation to the National Minimum Wage Act of 2018. And the last gazette that we then had was on the 8th of February that then pegged the EPWP minimum wage at R11.93 per hour for participants, noting that that is a minimum wage, and public bodies obviously would be able to allow for a wage that is commensurate with the wages for that type of work in the particular area. That the work provided enhances the public goods and community service. In other words, it is not the undertaking of work for the sake of undertaking work, but that it will build communities. It will find that we are feeding children. It will find that we are dealing with issues of health-related matters, that it really builds communities, builds schools, and sees the rejuvenation of our communities, so that we would find that it is not the work opportunities only, but also the contribution to the asset portfolio at a community level. And then for us, it's to ensure minimum labor intensity. So in other words, we are asking the question, if you have 100 rand, how much of that 100 rand goes towards wages? And so in our EPWP reporting, you will find that every quarter we will articulate how much money went to the poor, particularly as a measure to address inequality and to address poverty. And so with that measure, we are then able to say how many of the participants were then impacted through where they would find themselves, either in terms of the upper bound poverty or the lower bound poverty or the food poverty. Now, in terms of in addition to the guidelines, there is law. And the law is the Code of Good Practice in relation to the EPWP, and then also the ministerial determination for the Expanded Public Works Program. So work opportunities in the EPWP are subject to labor law, and the labor law then is put out by the Minister of Employment and Labor. Now, in terms of the guidelines, given the challenges, the aim was to provide guidance on the selection process and eliminate unfair and biased practices, provide guidance to stakeholders and in terms of their responsibilities, provide uniformity across the sectors in terms of the process of recruitment of participants, and provide a fair and transparent and a non-ambiguous recruitment process. So the recruitment guidelines then contain various principles that we would like public bodies to adapt and even put in their frameworks, their recruitment frameworks. So if we deal with it at a municipal level, what we have is EPWP municipal policy that gets adopted by councils. And we then want them to be able to put these guidelines in those particular policies so that council can collectively observe and oversee these particular issues contained in the overall EPWP policy. And a municipal policy, for example, will go beyond the recruitment issues. Now, in terms of the principles, we're looking at the principles of fairness. We're looking at the principles of equity, transparency, And that is particularly important, the transparency one, where we want community members to be provided with the opportunity to witness and to participate in the entire recruitment process. It is the accountability for ensuring that the process is undertaken well, and that as government officials, if we're involved in the process or any other stakeholder, for them to be answerable in terms of their actions. Ethics, respect for the environment, and commitment. Now, in terms of the issues that need to be considered in terms of the recruitment of the EPWP participants, it's that in terms of the roles and responsibility, that each public body is responsible for the recruitment and the selection of beneficiaries on each project. That it the recruitment in itself must be responsive to the law, and the law in terms of the ministerial determination and the code of good practice, and as mentioned, it is a variation of the Basic Conditions of Employment Act. And where you don't have it varied, it means the Basic of Conditions of Employment Act or any other labor law would then come into play. Community participation, we find that it is important before the initiation of any project that the community be mobilized and that communities be set up for representation representative of the needs for or representative of the community stakeholders. That the wages being set is to ensure the adherence to the minimum wage and not more than the prevailing wage wages in that particular area. Noting that the law here is important, nobody can pay lower than the EPWP minimum wage in terms of the Gazette from the Department of Employment and Labour. Adequate and accessible information, that community members are provided with information in a relevant, timely and accurate manner. And here we find that it is important that these notices get put up in communities. We're aware that at some communities we need to lend the information processes to what is viable in the area. So whether it is a community radio station that is utilized, flyers that are put up, that is what we are advocating. And we are also advocating that there would be an induction of all participants. We're aware that because of the unemployment situation in South Africa, that the labor market is not absorbing, but it is therefore important also from a labor law perspective that participants are inducted about their duties, understand that there is a start and an end date of a contract, and understand that that is all embedded from a legal perspective in terms of labor law, and that the eligibility be looked at in terms of self-targeting, where the participant says, I'm wanting to participate at that particular employment conditions, and that is in order. Where we target communities where the project is happening, okay, and so that the participants are drawn from projects or from communities that are closest to where the project is. That is all specified in the law also, which is the conditions of the Code of Good Practice and the Ministerial Determination, and that that the targeting and selection be adhered to by the implementing bodies. Now, we have various roles that we have to undertake, noting that we're looking at here now the roles from a sphere perspective. And so if we look at the public works roles, it is for us to provide the strategic documents, and it is important to recognize that the recruitment guidelines is only one set of those strategic documents. Again, mentioning that Deputy Minister mentioned that another strategic document will be the EPWP policy, in which we bring all of these matters together in one succinct document. We've conducted workshops, noting that post the development of and the approval of the guidelines, we went to the various provinces to make sure that this is announced. We are currently also working on a partnership with the community sector of the Nedlac constituency, the community constituency in Nedlac, to ensure that we ensure that awareness continues, because it is a never-ending process, so that communities can stand up for for what is rightfully theirs, to ensure the alignment of existing EPWP municipal policies to the recruitment guidelines. Municipalities have had municipal policies, and we have resolved that we will await the finalization of the national EPWP policy. And once we have that, we expect the municipal policies, which are endorsed by council, to be reviewed and to be aligned to that of the EPWP national policy on EPWP, to conduct evaluation assessments on the impact of the recruitment guidelines. And the presentation later will then deal with some of that evaluation work that we have started to undertake as Public Works, developing a mechanism to monitor compliance and also to ensure proper reporting. Now, at the provincial level, it's to provide support in terms of the guidelines. It is to utilize our structures within the EPWP and also within the IGR framework. Public bodies are participating in the district development model that is coordinated through COFDA. And so for us, it is to use these existing coordination structures to look at progress against the implementation of the guidelines, and also our provincial steering committees, EPWP ones, and the district steering committees, to be able to look at the progress, identify the areas of concern, that is the provincial coordinating departments of Public Works, to ensure that social facilitation is undertaken, that recruitment is undertaken in partnership with the community. And how would they do that? They would do it because we do project visits. Not only the provincial department does project visits, all the lead sector departments also do public body visits. National Department of Public Works also does visits to ensure that we look at not only the recruitment aspects, but look at various issues from the beneficiaries to the assets to etc. when we undertake public body visits, to ensure that wages comply with the minimum wage rate. The municipalities also need to ensure that it's aligned to the recruitment guidelines. They need to assist during the facilitation, and they need to make sure that communities are aware of the recruitment process. And so we know that EPWP is undertaken not only at a municipal level, but at national, provincial, and local level. Now, in terms of the compliance the compliance related matters, in terms of Section 6 of the Code of Good Practice, it basically says that the community must be mobilized before the initiation of an EPWP project, that the person to be eligible for participation must reside in the ward, must be available for work at the set dates, must apply to register for work in accordance with the manner specified by the recruiting body, and must monitor and ensure compliance. Then we have the recruitment guidelines in terms of transparency, and here it is to before the recruitment process commences, that all parties would be aware of the conditions of employment, that for work requiring persons of a particular profile, so that in other words there must be some form of skills audit of what the project requires, and that there's a process of redress should be outlined up front before the selection of participants. Then in terms of the recruitment guideline, here we're just emphasizing again that there should be induction, and this is aligned then to the expectations of the ministerial determination, that there's accountability as mentioned earlier. Now, the measures to be able to deal with non-compliance, noting that these are again guidelines, that it is, and the enforceability is the concern. However, Public Works is on a continuum to ensure that we look at policy. It is to be dealt with at institutional level, where the recruitment is taking place, that we expect that public bodies have mechanisms to impose, to expose non-compliance, and that if there are challenges, that they then be elevated to the Department of Public Works. And we do definitely receive these queries, which we investigate, and we then resolve and account to our acting DG, and we also account to our executive authority in relation to the complaints that have been received. Now, as mentioned, Public Works needs to be able to undertake some form of monitoring and evaluation of what is happening in terms of recruitment and selection. And we then committed, when we sat down with the constituencies, we asked the question how to improve the EPWP program. And one of the measures we looked at was the issue of ensuring transparency and accountability, particularly at a community level. And so we introduced this concept, which was called social audits. And now a social audit is basically we ask the community, just to put it in plain simple English, we ask the community to partner with us to account for the resources that government has spent on a project. In other words, communities help us to be able to verify that what a public body spent in terms of financial or non-financial was exactly used for its intended purposes. The idea is that we then have transparency through the particular process in terms of particularly with the application of the recruitment guidelines. Now, what we did was we then in October, we started a project in which we then are piloting the social audit process within the EPWP. And so these reports will be available on what we have found, particularly in the Ekurhuleni Metro, the Nkangala District, and the Steve Tshwete. And we're expecting that this particular study will be completed very early in the first quarter of 2021-22. And so the process is very exciting to be able to, and that's why we decided to put this out here, to show that it is not a process that is done, you know, for the people and not by the people. So we are involving communities where we, community leaders and ward councillors, are advised on what a social audit is. So there's education also involved in the process. Then there's the sourcing of relevant documents about projects that have been implemented in the EPWP. Then volunteers are recruited in terms to participate in the social audit process. We then train these community volunteers and social auditors on the implementation of this social audit process, and then look at monitoring and supervision of the collection of audit data. Ultimately, what we are looking for is trying to develop collect social audit data, develop a report, and that findings will help us to be able to put out what you call a social audit framework. It will be able to guide us how that framework must look, and that is a framework that's also part of our ammunition that we are looking at. So we mentioned the ammunition would be the law, the recruitment guidelines, the social audit framework, and ultimately what we are looking at is the EPWP policy. Now, we've done 80 volunteers have already received training. Data has been collected, and we have had some issues in terms of data collection, in terms of this project, particularly in December being affected, particularly because of the spike that was starting then. And we are then expecting that this data collection process culminates at the end of March, and that we would ultimately have the study completed in the first quarter, but that the social audit framework in itself will be developed in the year 21-22. And therefore, the recommendation is that the committee notes the DPWI brief on the update with regard to the recruitment guidelines and the social audits. Thank you.
Thank you very much, CJ. Deputy Minister, before I hand back, I just want to check if my colleagues, Lindy Ware and Pearl Ignatius, have anything to add. If they should please raise their hands. Otherwise, I'm going to hand back to the Deputy Minister and the Chair. Okay. Colleagues, I don't see your hands, so I'm going to hand back. Thank you so much. Thank you, Deputy Minister. Thank you, Chair.
No, thank you. Thank you once again, Chairperson. There's nothing much to add on from my side, save to indicate that the policy review that Mr. August and the petitioners have requested has started in earnest, and we are working on it. Probably what we could then request from the portfolio committee is a kind of support in the form of periodic updates, but also given the fact that legislators themselves are policymakers in their own right, we, in the process of us reporting to the committee at particular intervals, we engage so that what the product thereof of such engagement becomes is a product that we all can be proud of. But just reminding ourselves that we in our analysis, the key or major cause of the concerns raised by the petitioners is the absence of an enforceable policy. And therefore, having that will kind of, it may not necessarily do away with all the concerns, but it will minimize the occurrences of the kind of examples that Mr. August has raised, the issues of patronage, because there would be direct responsibility, not necessarily just a guideline to say you will do it in this way, but there will be a consequence attached to the kind of directives once it is a stronger policy. So, Honorable Chair, once again, I appreciate the opportunity to give it meeting back to you. Thank you very much.
Thank you, firstly, Mr. August, for your presentation, and DM, Acting DG, CJ, on the response and the update. I will then invite honorable members to comment on this. Honorable Suwisa, Honorable Graham Murray, Honorable Hicklin, Honorable who is Sean?
Chairperson, it's me, Honorable August.
Oh, okay. Thank you, Honorable August. Oh, I don't know. So that's why I couldn't point to you. But I think maybe let's start with you, Honorable Mr. August. Then you're followed by Honorable Suwisa, Honorable Prime Murray, Honorable Hicklin, Honorable Matebula, and lastly, Honorable Franz Kalvik. Can you do it that way? You will be the last one. Yes. Let's start with Mr. August as the author of the petition.
Chairperson, thank you once again. And I would like to thank the Deputy Minister and the officials, especially Ms. Abrams, that gave the report. And I've listened carefully to what she has said. And I know that it's difficult for the department at a national level to ensure that policy and guidelines is implemented at municipal level. But I want to state that the implementation of these policy guidelines is not happening at municipal level. There has been, she's referred to 2014, she's also referred to 2017, where there was consultation and policy reviews at the national level. But since then up until now, I can say to you today still, there are EPWP workers working in party regalia under their BIPs, ensuring that they're pushing a specific political party agenda. We also find that there's a lot of community engagements with community leaders from the different stakeholders. And it's those community leaders as well where they employ or give the names of their party members or branch members or families. I also would like the policy to speak to the review of the policy to speak to where members or EPWP workers continuously gets work for 6 months and 6 months or 12 months, year after year, and others are not given an opportunity. I've heard about the sanctions against the public bodies. I would have liked Ms. Abrams to perhaps give a little bit more explanation of what sanctions there is that's implemented against these bodies, what penalties they will have, and how we are implementing those penalties. We are not getting a fair and transparent employment of these EPWP workers, and I'm sure the officials will be able to align there and apply their mind on a policy that includes all spheres of government, and that those municipalities that steps out of line or don't follow the policy, that they also dealt with in different ways, and perhaps those ways or different sanctions can also be, we can also hear what those sanctions are, if it should be a penalty in terms of a fine, if it should be a whatever a process the department will put in place. So, Chairperson, that's just my few notes that I've made from the presentation, but I'm happy to hear the other questions coming from the members, and I also want to thank the department for putting this proposal in place. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Honourable August. And then, Honourable Siwisa.
Thank you, Chair. And I also like to say, let's welcome the presentation, even though some things are not very clear as to what's happening. Chairperson, I have one concern that there are all of these guidelines and there are workshops that are going to be set up. But now, is part of the workshop, is the community going to be part of those workshops for them to understand the process of recruitment and appointment and everything? And when you speak about public bodies, do you speak about your ward committee or your council, or you're speaking about the ward councillor alone? Because we found in many instances that ward councillors are the ones that make the decisions independently. So even though the guidelines speak about bodies, public bodies, but you find that councillors do their own appointment according to who is their favorite and who's not their favorite, who voted for them, who did not vote for them, without thinking of poverty allegations. And then when it comes to the guidelines, are they standard or are they being changed based on the population or allocation per municipality? Because even the question of, there's a part that says the project that is done in a ward should benefit the people immediately in that ward. But we don't see that happening in most of these projects. And I'm going to speak specifically about the project that happened in my ward, Ward 17, which is about 2 years back, where people wanted to go in an uproar because people from other areas were brought into the ward to come and do a project of storm drainage, and it involves EPWP. And another thing is about beneficiaries. I know of people that have been in the EPWP program since I started in education. Even today, they are still beneficiaries of EPWP, and yet we are saying the program is there to alleviate poverty. And you look at the system, how it works, because if you say that a person is there temporarily, and then you are not alleviating them to be able to work independently or to get a job somewhere, then it becomes a problem. And in the process, it causes an uproar within the communities itself, because the same person appears and then other people are left out, instead of there should be a rotation that happens. And you'd ask yourself, because these projects are continuous, some of these EPWP beneficiaries, you'd find that they've got certain qualifications, but because of there are no job creations, permanent job creations, whereby we can look into giving these people permanent jobs. And now it causes a conflict of interest within the communities itself, because people do not understand the process and will forever have poverty in our communities and their forever process. But you find that people cannot get out of poverty because of even the minimum wage that you're talking about. The other day there was a presentation as to how much per hour, and then you get that there's not even minimum wage that you're talking about that is going to actually assist people to get out of to alleviate them from the poverty that is there. And you talk about guidelines. And one of our standpoints is that these beneficiaries must be taken in into permanent jobs, because some of these things are things that are happening continuously. Some of these people can get jobs later on in other fields, but it should be in such a manner that the program should give permanent jobs with benefits for a longer period of time, because you bring a beneficiary in for a project of 6 months. You can't even open an installment. What are you going to buy in 6 months when the money is not even at the minimum wage that is being requested? And taking into consideration, Chairperson, that already the Department of Public Works has a crisis of vacant positions, and they say that they are going to monitor that compliance is going to happen across all the municipalities and provinces. It's their responsibility of National Department of Public Works to make sure that there's compliance. How are they going to do that if at this moment they have a crisis of vacant positions to ensure that the Department of Public Works runs smoothly? Those are my questions only for now, Chair. I'll listen and maybe have follow-up questions. Thank you.
Thank you, Honourable Suisa, Honourable Grammar.
Thank you, Chair. Chair, my question or my points are twofold. In the first instance, mine is procedural. This is the first petition that's come before our committee, and I'm a first-term MP. So I would just like a little bit of clarity around the process, because it seems to me that it comes to the Speaker's office and then it came to us, but we didn't actually see it, and then it went to the department so that they could respond to it before we had engaged with it. So I just want to know if that's the normal procedure. And also, I'd like to know how many signatures were on the petition. Purely just from an academic perspective, just to know what the threshold is for a petition to actually be discussed by a portfolio in terms of, you know, what would be the minimum number of signatures required for a portfolio to consider a petition. So it's just procedural, just for my own edification. I'd like to thank Honourable Sean August for bringing this petition. I think most of us who've come into Parliament who were previously councillors have real understanding of the issues on the ground around the implementation of EPWP and the effect that political patronage is having on the program and also on the communities. So I think it is a very, very important discussion to be having, and hopefully we can also provide some of our own insight in terms of our own experience as to what has happened. One of the things that we need to remember is not just from a municipal perspective, but even on national projects. What is happening is that where EPWP projects are running on a construction site and it's managed by the Department of Public Works, those EPWP participants are arriving on those sites and literally being dumped there, and they're left in the hands of the contractor. There's no follow-up, there's no monitoring, there's no making sure that they're being properly utilized. More often than not, they are demotivated and disincentivized because they are earning such a low wage, and the construction companies are really battling to get any real work out of the EPWP participants. On the other side of the coin is Kucha's EPWP implementation. I've heard reports that when Kucha are implementing an EPWP project on a construction site, it's chalk and cheese. The guys arrive with proper PPE. They are ready. I think the contractor provides hard ass and the rest is done. They are monitored. They are motivated. They are properly trained. There's a real difference in the way the EPWP project is being implemented on a construction site between Kucha implementing agents and DPWI. So perhaps it might be worthwhile experience to ask Kucha what they're doing differently and why they're getting it right. That's just the one thing. The other thing is that there's no incentive for implementers. And we had this discussion recently about EPWP. We withhold funds from a municipality. The only people who suffer as a result are the beneficiaries. The person in charge of EPWP in the municipality does not get in any way, shape, or form punished for their lack of integrity or their lack of implementation or for anything else. We're punishing the wrong people in our means of trying to control the implementation. So we have to find a new mechanism for ensuring that the people tasked with the implementation at municipal, provincial, national level are actually incentivized in some other way in order to make sure that they are doing their jobs properly. Because otherwise, the people on the ground are the people that really suffer. As we know, most municipalities are completely dysfunctional at the moment. Their systems are just completely useless. They're not following procedures. They're not making proper payments. They don't have proper IT systems in place. And one of the keys, I think, in order for this to work properly and to address some of the concerns that Honourable August raised with respect to, you know, people staying and Honourable Suisa, people staying on the project forever and people not being rotated effectively in that, would require proper database management. A municipality or an implementing agent needs to have a database of who the people who are available to work versus the people that are working, versus the people that have already worked, and they need to rotate. They can't do that without proper database management. So something's got to be done to address that system. Because it's all good and well getting public participation and meeting with the communities. I mean, we know that's not happening. But even if that's happening, you still need to be managing the system. And if there isn't a proper database management process in place, you're never going to have proper records. You're never going to know who is currently working, who has worked, who still hasn't worked. And that's one of the biggest problems that we have. And the social audit framework, I think, is a marvelous idea, and I think it'll go a long way to assisting in addressing some of the shortcomings. So I think that's quite exciting. And then obviously the other thing is that I know, I think for CWP, and there's supposed to be an exit strategy in play. Oh, no, well, no, we talk about other programs in the municipality where there's an exit strategy. There doesn't seem to be a proper exit strategy on.
I think we've lost Honorable Graham Murray. Honorable Graham Murray. We'll allow her to come in. Honourable Graham Murray, are you back?
Doesn't seem so, Chair.
Yeah, Honourable members, I'm sure you're all aware that we have a challenge of the internet tech. Let's then go or move to Honourable Hicklin. We will allow Honourable Graham Murray to finish when she's back.
Thank you so much, Chair. Thank you, Honourable August, for your petition. And CJ, thank you so much for a very professional presentation. It raises a couple of questions, a lot of which have been covered, but I'd just like to put a couple of words together that I think we need to bear in mind when we look at the EPWP program. For me, the biggest problem that I think we have with the EPWP is that people see it as a career choice and a career path as opposed to a stepping stone to upskilling one. for good and proper employment. And we need to look at that as a shortfall that we have with the EPWP and link it to the fact that we have repeat recipients. In other words, people, as Honourable Graham Murray said, people are not being rotated. And you will have someone who is in the EPWP within a ward, within a region, who stays in that pool and goes from one project to the next project to the next project to the next, for years. And that really needs to be addressed, because this needs to be an upskilling opportunity where a person who has a basic skill is upskilled to the next level so that they no longer form part of that small base of opportunities available to a vast group of people who have no skills. My next most important question is, what is the DPWI doing about upskilling NGOs who default because they do not know how to fill in the paperwork? I understand there is a devolution of power between national to provincial to local level, but it must fall somewhere within our ambit to ensure that the NGOs who are defaulting and by implication not filling in the proper paperwork, so they are not getting paid, they have to be upskilled, and that buck has to stop with us. Again, how do we know that municipalities are alerting the entire community that could be eligible for these EPWP programs? Can we not write into our guidelines that there has to be some kind of consequence management for those municipalities who are not communicating correctly with all the people who could potentially benefit from an EPWP? We actually have to ensure that the municipalities do and the provinces do what they are expected to do. That is our job. In as much as it's our job as honourable members to perform oversight over the department, the department has to perform oversight over the province and the municipalities to ensure that the guidelines are actually implemented properly, which again says that the social audit is a fantastic tool, but we have to ensure that it actually works. We have to ensure that what recommendations come out of that social audit become part of an EPWP public works bill that makes contravention of that bill an offence, and there has to be consequence management. As Honourable Graham Murray said, we have to make sure that the manager in the municipality who doesn't ensure that he gets the necessary paperwork actually is the person who feels the brunt of the pain, not the person who's done the work and now doesn't get paid. I'll leave it there. Thank you so much, Chair.
Thank you, Honourable Graham Murray. Honourable Matibula.
Thank you very much, Chair. My greetings to the Deputy Minister yourself, the whip of the committee, members, honourable members, and the administration of the department. Chair, let me begin by saying that we appreciate the decision taken by Mr. August to exercise his constitutional rights and engage us through the petition. It's something that is so encouraging. Of course, we need to be put under the microscope as the politicians and the department, whether or not we are doing our job in accordance to our mandate. So Mr. August is one of those who has actually put us under the microscope. Chair, well, I must hasten to say that we need to ensure that Mr. August is assured of the fact that any thing that happens that is an anomaly under this government, we will not leave it to chance. We have seen and we are also seeing how government tackles issues of maladministration, corruption, and other anomalies. Now, Chair, I'm not so sure when there's this issue, because I also listened from the department, where it spoke about the issue of patronage inconsistency. As to how was that picked up? And the department, I find it, you know, quite a bit disturbing that they are able to report and say that there are such things that have been going on, but there is no indication whatsoever that is convincing. That indicates to us as to how at best they have dealt with the matter, because it cannot continuously raise its ugly head, this matter of patronage and inconsistency at the level of the municipality where these projects take place. Now, as it has also been indicated, Chair, that these programs are not meant for politicians to, you know, increase their popularity at the level of local government, so that in particular councillors must be re-elected come the next elections. It would not be a correct thing to do. And my understanding, Chair, is that the issue of employment of participants is purely an administrative matter. Now, I just want to check from Mr. August as to what type of a tool has he used to kind of identify the things that he spoke about, wherein there's the issue of patronage, there's issue of, you know, councillors, you know, being involved in the appointment of participants. How has he actually come up discovered that particular anomaly? Another matter, Chair, I want to know from the department as to when there are these particular projects taking place in various municipalities. Is there anything, because we are made to understand that the participants have to rotate, of which is a good thing. But we have seen in some comes in situations wherein participants would want to come back and not allow others a chance, you know, to work in those projects. My take, Chair, is that possibly is that once they work there and there is no any training that takes place while they are actually engaging with the projects, and there is no any certificate given to them, so that they don't become people who are attached to projects, but they can use such certificates to start their own businesses. Say, for instance, they were constructing a stormwater drainage. What is it that these people, once they have completed the stormwater drainage, other than the salaries that they get, that will sustain them beyond the project? That's one other thing. Lastly, Chair, we have seen, Chair, that in most municipalities, you've got what you call unemployment forums. These unemployment forums, Chair, we know that when they are projects, they would normally come in whether one or two or in numbers and want to take over the running of the project. How has that affected, you know, the appointment of participants? Because my understanding is that some of these unemployment forums, they would come up, they would come with business people to say, take this type of business companies or these companies to do sub-construction work for this company. And the company out of fear, they would actually take those companies. And they would do the same also when it comes to employment of participants. They would come with their own people, force the company to take those people. So I just want to know, Chair, as to how has that affected projects that are taking place through the department. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Honourable Matabula. Honourable Fanskalvi.
Thank you, Chairperson, and good morning to Chairperson, DM, the Acting DG officials, Honourable Members, as well as Honourable August present. Chairperson, I would like to welcome the presentation that has been made, including this initiative by Honourable August. And Chairperson, I'm not going to dwell on the issues that have already been raised, but Chairperson, it's clear to us that we haven't received the actual petition as being presented by Honourable August. So if that can be availed to us so that we can have proper scrutinization as members in terms of what's actually pertained in this petition. Then, Chairperson, the social audit framework that's being presented or being developed, I think it's proper for us to request that during the stages of the quarterly reports being presented, it will be beneficial to both the members as well as to the department and this branch if we can get an update on how far this process is in terms of the social audit. Then, Chairperson, when we look at the intention of the EPWP initiative, the issue of skills transfer always comes up, and the employability of these individuals after being in this program it's a point of concern. And I think that's why we find that the discrepancy arises where people are hopping from one project to the other because they don't find the proper skills and the certification for them to be employable elsewhere. And if that can be addressed, I think the problem will be halfly solved. Then, Chairperson, we have an extensive, if we can have an extensive database in terms of the participants, what they, how long have they been in the program, what skills did they acquire, and if that can be spearheaded through a reporting format from nationally, the DPWP, EPWP branch, it will be assisting us. Then, Chairperson, we know that this is a program that's being outrolled at local level. And I think one of our biggest problems and challenges in terms of this project is the fact that DPWP or DPWI is a concurrent function, and which means that DPWI has no authority on provincial and local government, and therefore it hinders the branch to be enabled to and empowered to enforce implementation of policy at the municipal level. And I think that's going to be a long-term problem in terms of this initiative. And if we establish this policy or roll out this policy, then I think we need to try and find a proper measures on how to ensure that the main objectives are being reached as being initiated from the start when this program of EPW. Thank you, Chairperson.
Thank you, Honorable Franz Kalvik. Honorable Njobo.
I'm very happy with the questions made by Honorable Franz Kalvik.
You are covered.
100%.
Thank you, Honorable Njobo. Let me, I think, add my voice in what Honorable Matebula said, Honorable August, that we really appreciate that you initiated this petition. The reason I'm saying that is because as the Portfolio Committee, we have been saying this since 2019. When we were members, we were appointed to be members of this committee. The lack of a uniform policy that guides the implementation of EPWP across all spheres, including the NGOs. So it's something that we have said too. As this portfolio committee, we have requested updates quarterly on the implementation of a EPWP. When we request the quarterly performance report, we requested those updates. Though we don't get them as we want as the portfolio committee. So when you came with your petition, it's something that we have been dealing with as the portfolio committee. So that is in appreciation for your petition. It is correct. It is something that we also dealing with as the committee. And I know for a fact from the legacy report that we were given when we came here, that even in the fifth administration, I believe the portfolio committee went into one of the municipalities. In fact, the development of the uniform policy was there even in the fifth administration. So it can be that this is a new thing that you have raised and that we have also raised as the members of this committee. The portfolio committee in the fifth administration went to one of the municipalities in Eastern Cape, Mbashe Municipality, which was trying to implement the uniform policy, and it was doing so well. So why the department didn't take that and ensure that it is done across all spheres, that's a question that remains, that needs to be answered. But I think I don't know whether it was Honorable Saha Graham or Honorable Hicklin who raised this, that as long as the public works bill is not there, the department is going to face challenges in enforcing a uniform policy, because this needs to be written in black and white in the bill that we want or the act that manages and guides how public works act. So this policy, the line that talks to EPWP, uniform policy, also has to be there. We will be dealing with that tomorrow. But I think it is correct that we started with this petition of yours, Honorable August. But I think we must then indicate to Honorable Graham Murray, who raised this, that the petition was sent to the Speaker, which was correct because it was sent to the National Assembly, and then it was sent to the relevant committee, which is our committee through ATC. And then when we received the petition as the committee, what we're supposed to do is to call the petitioner, Honorable August, which we've done for today, and ask the department to talk on that and engage. Today, in fact, we are doing so, Honorable
Graham Murray, and I believe some of the questions that you also raised, they also, if I can say, they add on what Honorable August has indicated, and they are in fact saying that there is really a need of this policy that Honorable August has indicated there is a need of it. I will then hand over to you, DM, and your team to respond on the questions and comments raised by honorable members and of the committee and honorable August, who is the petitioner. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Honorable Chairperson. Allow me, Honorable Chairperson, without sounding disrespecting the committee, to give to the acting DG and his team to first go into responses and allow me to come last. Thank you, Chairperson. Acting DG, over to you.
Thank you very much, Deputy Minister. I'm going to hand over back to CJ Ignatius Pearl to fill out the questions, and I will deal with the rest. CJ, over to you and the team.
Thank you, ADG. Thank you, Deputy Minister. In relation to the sanctions, Lindy will deal with most of that particular sanctions. However, to note that the key issue over here is that it is recruitment guidelines, and we expect that the matter then gets taken up, particularly at a public body level. But for us also, one of the key issues in relation to the sanction is the issue of programs. It is about the importance of, particularly at the municipal level, tightening up on the programs, what the purpose of the programs are, and defining the programs so that one would have the required oversight of those particular programs. And I think here we're going to rely on best practice. So, for example, the Department of Environment has working four programs. And because of the setup of the project falling under a program, you find that a program then would have norms and standards and all of those related matters. So for us, from a policy perspective, the key issue that we are looking at is to tighten up on program formation within the EPWP. So the issue of sanctions will be covered by Lindy as per the recruitment guideline. But for us, one of the key consequences that we see at the local level is the need for us to improve on particularly programs. Honorable Sawisa, yes, the workshops will be a mixture, which would include the councillor and the community. We find that it is vital for us to engage with the NEDLAC constituency to ensure that we get better coverage in relation to these particular workshops that will be undertaken. Now, that is clearly breaking the law if participants are then from other wards, because the law in terms of the employment by the Department of Employment clearly state that if there's not sufficient skills, up to 20% can be selected from other areas. And it is a matter that can be, obviously I note the project is complete, but it is a matter that can even be referred to us as the Department of Public Works, and then one can engage with the Department of Employment and Labour, particularly in relation to the fact that the law, which is the ministerial determination, has not been adhered to. In terms of the issue of rotation, it is a principle that EPWP puts forth in relation to its policies, and we would require that public, that participants are rotated. And that's why when we look at the contract, it is very important that we put out the start and the end dates in relation to the projects. However, we must also recognize it's a policy issue that we need to deal with. EPWP, when it started out, had a clause that stated that participants may only be engaged in a public employment program for a maximum of 2 years within a five-year period. And why I say it's a policy issue is because this whole issue of exit relates to the issue of where do people exit to. So yes, we can go ahead and we can put forth a proposal in which we then say you must exit. But the question is, when the economy is not growing and the economy is not growing with jobs, where do the participants then exit into? So it is definitely a principle of rotation is important. And even to get to Honorable Van Schalkwyk's question, the EPWP and Honorable Graham, the issue of even monitoring whether that rotation is happening is possible, because the EPWP reporting system links the participants' IDs to the work opportunity. So we are clearly able to see if there is a situation where participants are being within the program for a very long time. But we've got a big policy issue, which is where do you go to if the economy is not growing? And we also recognize that the National Development Plan relies heavily on the Expanded Public Works Program and says that if the economy doesn't grow enough, then they expect that the EPWP, in terms of the growth scenarios in Chapter 3 of the NDP, would allow for the EPWP to be able to take up some of those work opportunities. The challenge with that, and we've been particularly talking to the NPC commissioner in relation to that issue, and this is an issue that even came up in the policy development process, is that the mechanism for even funding the EPWP is not as responsive as one would like. We even saw with the presidential employment stimulus, there was clear processes that needed to be followed in terms of the passing of budgets before even additional funding. So the issue of rotation, it is a principle within EPWP that we advocate for rotation. However, we do know that there is a problem where people do remain in the program for longer, but it's the key question is, what is going to be our policy in relation to this matter? Are we going to return to the days where we say, unfortunately, because of equity reasons, we would have to propose that we reintroduce that particular principle, fully knowing that that the economy is not absorbing sufficiently. Also tied to that particular issue is the issue of skills, that when we got to EPWP Phase 3, there was this big discussion to be able to say, but colleagues, even when you provide the work experience and the Statistics South Africa studies that were done, surveys, prove that the work experience is the relevant experience. That augmented also with the skills training. But even when that happens, the economy is not absorbing. So we've got a big problem. So originally we looked at this particular issue as being a issue of the first world, the first economy and the second economy. And we always saw it as only if we can provide people with enough skills, then they would be able to take up an opportunity. And when we then got to the second and the third phase, we recognized, but the problem is the first economy is not absorbing. And if the first economy is not absorbing, we're sitting in a problem. Also, the NDP recognizes that the primary solution to our unemployment situation is the fact that the country will grow and create employment opportunities. And therefore, you find that if the country grows, the scenarios in the NDP Chapter 3 clearly states that the reliance on a PEP would be so much less. So the real problem that we are faced with as a country is the fact that there is just not enough opportunities for the people entering the labor market. And that is a bigger problem that one needs to look at from a governmental perspective. Because public employment programs were always seen to be a short-term intervention. If you follow our 2004, it was short-term. And then when we moved on, we said a medium-term. Because we are just not seeing the ability to push through. It's like a pipeline that is blocked. that even with this experience where EPWP participants, and our studies show it, they come into the EPWP, they've never worked before, they get the work experience, and it's very difficult to then move on. We do monitor wages. It is an issue that we constantly engage on, particularly through the projects reported in terms of the EPWP reporting system. And we then engage public bodies on the wage levels, whether the wage levels are at the not meeting the minimum, or we find that the wage in itself, we need to be able to ask public bodies a bit more about what is happening in terms of the wage setting. So for us, we do monitor the monitoring of the minimum wage, and we've seen a good improvement because of the emphasis over there over the last many years to clarify that EPWP, it is the law, you must pay the minimum wage. And so you found, particularly initially, when we started before we started to focus on this part, we found that many of the social sector participants that used to be volunteers were not paid the national minimum wage. But as we have moved on, we have seen great compliance, and that I think we can showcase even in our monitoring and evaluation statistics of how that particular issue has been dealt with. So we take that as a very serious matter. We will personally report that particular matter to the Department of Employment and Labour, because if we check the Gazette of the National Employment the national minimum wage, it clearly states if you are found to be non-compliant, you will experience charges as a government department or an employer. And you may end up paying twice the rate or even more in terms of the wage that you did not pay. So it's a legal issue, it's a rights issue, and it must be maintained. And there one has no mercy if that particular matter comes to light, because the Department of Employment and Labour does have a mechanism through the inspectorate to be able to deal with non-compliance. And government officials must be aware that if that does happen, you then will have to deal with the consequences of fruitless and wasteful expenditure, because you need to understand that that wage should have been paid, and the penalty in itself has to come from somewhere, and therefore the non-compliance is totally unacceptable. Okay, a beneficiary should be taken into permanent jobs. What we have noticed is that some areas, so particularly with school assistants or administration assistants at schools, we find that particularly with the skills and the interventions and the experience that we offer through the EPWP, that there's also a natural movement into permanent jobs. And so we as EPWP have now started what we call a tracer study to be able to see how people then transition from the EPWP. And remember, it's a study, then need to be a sample, because what we have picked up from public bodies is that they give you then the anecdotal or a case study at a provincial steering committee where they say to you, look here, staff, EPWP workers have been taken up to be traffic officers, or EPWP participants have been taken up to undertake ECD work. And we then said, look here, we need to be able to track this a bit better. Also to note that this was always tracked through the department, through Statistics South Africa. And so for us, a key thing would be to ensure that we reinforce and make sure that whatever is collected in terms of the EPWP gets published in terms of the quarterly labor force survey. In terms of monitoring compliance, we do public body visits as the EPWP, and the public body visits are undertaken on a monthly basis. However, the challenge there is the quantum of the projects that we have versus the ability to undertake these public body visits. Also to note, when we find non-compliance, the DG's office is inundated. I think yesterday we even sent 18 letters to the acting DG's office, whereby we write to accounting officers and we advise them particularly on the areas of non-compliance as public works. The challenge that we have there is that sometimes when we do write, we don't necessarily get the response. So for us, it again ties in with the issue, another policy issue, which is how do we ensure accountability? And for us to ensure accountability would be to ensure that we put the EPWP as a standard indicator in all APPs of government departments. So that, even though the process is currently underway for a policy, we've now started to engage then the Department of the DPME. And the DPME have advised us that as a public work sector, our customized indicator needs to be in by September this particular year. Noting that the challenge with the customized indicator is that they are able to lead on and assist us with the customized indicator for national departments and provincial departments, the challenge will be at a municipal sphere where we have to work strongly with COCTA to ensure that that takes place. So that will be a longer project than the one that we currently have for this year, which is if we get the indicator of EPWP work opportunities in the APP of the various accounting offices, we then can start to hold them accountable in some of these compliance issues where we say we don't have teeth as the Department of Public Works. And that would then open up the ability for the projects to be audited. If we then look, Ignatius will take the issue on the construction sites and in terms of Kuga, but ultimately what we traditionally do is, like any other program, you will find that there are areas where we do well, and the areas that we do well, we particularly write up as best practice to ensure that it is replicated. The issue is how to deal with construction sites that are not doing well. And I think Mr. Ario then can talk about that because we're talking about the sweet part, but we're not talking about the compliance measures. Mr. Ario will deal with that. Honorable Graeme Marie, I agree with you that we need to look at how participants are not adversely affected. And this is also an issue by the Deputy Minister. So what we've done, for example, this year is in terms of the incentive, one needs to recognize that the incentive is a fixed amount of money. Okay, and that's not the only money in terms of the EPWP. There's large pockets of money if you look in the E&E under the community work program that goes onto their vote, environmental affairs that goes onto their vote, provincial roads that will go onto their vote. But the money under public works ambit, which is going to be about 2.7 billion in the new financial year. What we've done this year is we have made sure that we have put in measures where your allocation is affected because you have not undertaken the measures or adhered to the guidelines. With that, we know poverty is so profuse that at the end of the day, we are still ensuring that the money goes to the people. Obviously, that particular locality will be more adversely affected because of the penalties that one would then undertake to that particular public body. But you would find that the money as a whole will be dispensed across. So that issue, I don't think we've really grappled with it, and I think we need to be honest, and we will bring that particular issue out of how does one balance that issue of when the officials are not doing well. But it also ties in with the accountability issues. Once we get to a level whereby there's an indicator in each public body's APP, then you can have much more issues of consequence management for people that flout rules. In terms of who is available to work and who has worked, so we have a database of who has worked. We've now concluding an MOU with the Department of Employment and Labour, and part of that where this MOA links is the Public Employment Services. And under the Public Employment Services, they have what you call a database. So Honorable van Schalkwyk, I'm also talking to the database issues. So for us, the Department of Employment and Labour have said, look here, they've got an employment services database. And from a policy perspective, we might have to decide whether it may be a important principle to bring about that the ESA database, Employment Services database, be utilized in terms of selecting the participants. In terms of exit, we do look at the exit of the participants, but noting that at any particular point in time, we've got about 900,000 participants coming into the program. And so for us, we focus then on training initiatives, and we get our money then from the Department of Higher Education and Training. We are funded the most, we are the highest funded public body in terms of outside DHET. But that money is clearly not enough. What we've then done is we've ensured that each sector has a training strategy. Now, it links to that customized indicator, because if we don't force public bodies to put part of the budget aside to do training, we're then going to have an issue where we always talk about training funds are not sufficient to be able to cover this. It's also important that projects and programs are designed in that way to have a high level of training. So what you found in the environment and culture sector is that they've introduced a lot of training aspects, so that at least a large proportion of their participants then have access to training, given the programs that they have. So they have programs such as the chef programs, the sommelier programs, even the working on fire programs. There's a lot of training included into the program in itself. So that issue continues to be an issue of funding, but we're also looking at it from a training strategy perspective. Training figures are reported on the EPWP reporting system, and it is also in our quarterly report that we put out in terms of the quarterly performance that we put out as Public Works. But we will find that there's always the dichotomy between what does public bodies will say to you, now I've got the problem. I've got a million people that are unemployed in my area. I've got to make a choice. Do I spend 40,000 on a learnership, or is that same cost applied to one more work opportunity that must be created? So it's again also that policy dichotomy that we are faced with in relation to the particular matter. In terms of, yes, we are aware, I did personally come across this issue, Honorable Heckland, that people do move from one program to the next, and project to the next. And then when we deal with the issue of equality, we need to ask the question, is it something that we forbid in terms of the policy, which is for equality purposes, we would require you to be a participant in and limited to the number of projects. We also monitor that on an annual basis. There's a very small group of participants that are undertaking more than one project. One will see that even in our analysis reports that we do. But it is a policy issue on whether one goes ahead and limits it. PIL will deal with the issue of the NPOs. And so for us, the accountability issue is very much linked to the APP. And for us to start to get it into the APP, because once you get it into the APP, your accounting officers will start to apply the tools within government to deal with the consequence management of non-application. And then you would also have the ability to work with the Auditor General to highlight the areas of non-compliance. Honorable Matabula, we pick it up mainly because... And I think this is the part I enjoy a lot. Our EPWP website has the Office of the DDG's details on, and all our sectors. We have a very active social media platform in terms of Facebook, for example. So much of the issues are brought up through these, and then also through the department, through the ADG's office, and also through the minister's office. We also monitor the media on a daily basis, and so that's where we also pick up on these particular issues. And then when issues then, and why I enjoy it, and let me be clear, is because you will hear one thing in a meeting, but you will hear the true picture when you start to speak to the participants. And so it is something that I personally enjoy undertaking to phone participants up to understand the nature of the issue and to deal with issues of where processes have not been followed. We have also now worked on a frequently asked questionnaire that we put up on our website to be able to make sure that people can understand where they how they communicate fraud, corruption, or anything that is a challenge related to the program. We also aim to ensure that we answer questions better, such as late payments or the importance of having a contract and things like that. So we started to be able to work on that, and we will be finished by today in terms of updating our frequently asked questions, which will deal with some of these particular issues. In terms of exiting, I've dealt with that. What we do with training is we specifically work with the CETAs to determine what are the key training or the skills required by the economy. We then develop what you call a skills list, and that is a signed-off list by me on an annual basis after consultation with the colleagues. And then we put it out to be able to say those are the skills we'll be providing within the EPWP. Now in the next quarter, we will be undertaking a program whereby we'll be applying more, where public bodies can access the DHET funding. We are also busy with an exciting project at the moment for Exit, where we have partnered with AgriCETA, and currently since late last year to now, we have managed to select about 200 and let me just get the number right, 233 participants that have been placed with various private sector employers and that would be taking up various artisanal training. They will be going on training until the year 2023. We are now then on the AgriCETA's website. You will see that there's an open invitation to organizations to take up the residual so that we are able to ensure that 400 EPWP participants are able to exit the EPWP program with skills that doesn't deal with that issue that I mentioned up front, the issue of the economy not growing. Yes, the economy is not growing in terms of jobs, but that doesn't mean public works must stop to ask where is the sectors that can potentially be drawing. And so we particularly focused on the artisans, and not only artisans in the conventional sense, such as mechanics and electricians and things like that, but we've even moved this year into things such as chefs in terms of the trades that we are looking at. In terms of the unemployed forums, yes, I actually last week I got one of those, particularly with an issue with regard to in the Northwest. And the clear point that Public Works keeps on emphasizing is that we select our people in an open and transparent fashion, particularly the issues of contractors and how contractors were selected. We were very clear that there's an open and transparent fashion. Organizations have the ability to apply through the tender system, and therefore we cannot allow for forums to engage us if it is not through the publicly announced measures in terms of this. In terms of the database, Honorable van Schalkwyk, I think the key question for us is whether one decides to go ahead and centralize the use of the employment services, and one needs to be able to then look at the practicality of that particular issue in the sense that the reach for the poor to get onto that database. You can't be making it worse off for the poor to be able to find their way onto their database. So one needs to be very pragmatic when you start to ask about these databases that will help with transparency, but then it can't close the doors in terms of access. So the social audits, yes, definitely we can provide the updates. We actually provide updates on a monthly basis to the NEDLAC and to the presidency on other job summit commitments. Skills audit, you see, well, this is the issue we always have as public works. We've got a reporting system that allows us to be able to capture quite a bit of data. But public bodies always have this pushback with us to say, public works, you want the ID, public works, there's this all these capturing and all of these controls you put in. We are fatigued by you as public works. And so we always need to balance that requirement in terms of of what we require. But there are public bodies that do put out particularly skills, the skills information, the skills profile of participants. And that is obviously very helpful for us to be able to target training. But it is not mandatory at the moment. And so again, that is an issue that we need to talk about, which is if the country says to us that at a certain point of that 11 million jobs that is required by 2030, they're going to need to us to scale up more. We're going to have to balance which stuff are critical and which stuff just breaks the bank. And so it's really a policy issue that one needs to look at. I note the point on the concurrent functions. I do agree with you, but I do want to say that we've got an amazing relationship with the provinces. We, as the EPWP, sit on a quarterly basis with our provinces at a forum called the National Coordinating Committee, and we then look at strategic issues that is then elevated to our MINMEX in relation to the issues. EPWP is a standing item on our MINMEX. We also participate and provide support to the provincial structures. In fact, EPWP, DPWI representatives, 100% of the time, we are part of the provincial structures and the governance structures and have to be able to account and provide reports there. So we find that the relationships are sound and they are working well. We also then have what we call protocol agreements that we have now signed. The minister sent it out last year. Obviously affected by some of the COVID-19 happenings, but we are now preparing a submission for our executive authority to say that the Northwest has fully complied. In other words, the Premier of the Northwest has signed and committed that even in that document that there will be recruitment and selection and recruitment will be adhered to in terms of our recruitment guidelines. The Premier has signed in the Northwest, the MEC of Public Works, the HOD of Public Works, the MEC of COCTA, the HOD of COCTA, the HOD, the Municipal Manager has signed, and also then the the Municipal Manager has signed, and then the Mayor or Executive Mayor has signed in the Northwest Province. We've had good progress also in provinces like Mpumalanga and Limpopo, but what we've said is that we are now taking those protocols for signing the law signature to be the Minister of Public Works. It gives us a overall view of who's accountable at what level and puts out all their responsibilities and recognizes that this is a program that requires intergovernmental sound relations and also sound working. And what we've done is those provinces that have not given us the protocols fully signed, and noting that there's number of signatories, we have prepared letters for the minister to be able to advise that you have not done so. We cannot hold up the Northwest Province because these documents need to be circulated within the province, and people, everybody that participates in the EPWP need to be cognizant that the OTP and everybody else that has signed has said that they will adhere to auditing, recruiting, reporting, governance structures, and whatever that protocol covers. As Public Works, we have endeavored that at these provincial structures, we will provide feedback to say that we are finding that there are areas of non-compliance. I think in general, those are the issues that were coming through, but to advise that the one thing that is a problem is we do have an M&E framework, especially when it comes to these particular recruitment indicators. We recognize that the work on the social audits is moving in the right direction, but there's a need for us to be able to improve on our measurement of where there is non-compliance in relation to this matter. And so that is an area that we must look at in terms of developing these sound indicators. It is there in the policies, but we haven't done enough work on that. So with that, thank you. I want to give over to Paul and Ignatius. Apologies for taking so long.
Thank you, Ms. Abrahams. Honorable Chair, if I may just add a little bit, my name is Ignatius Sario from Department of Public Works and Infrastructure. Honorable members, Deputy Minister, Acting Director General, Honorable August, colleagues, just to add a little bit, I think on the issue of the issue of KUHA, it's an issue of project management, and it's something that we are trying to strengthen within the department so that we have uniformity between the projects that are being implemented through the implementing agents and those that are being done by the internal project managers, so that the project managers can ensure that they monitor the projects according to the ETWP principles. We've had workshops with the different regions, and we are continuing to meet with our own program project managers so that we can capacitate them, so that we can oversee the EPWP projects according to the principles, so that we have uniformity. I think just to say that also in terms of the officials in public bodies, one of the things we are doing in the absence of the overall policy, we trained in the public bodies where we're engaging some of the municipalities, especially some of the metros. We are trying to get EPWP, them to adopt EPWP policies, and also trying to get EPWP targets within the performance agreements of the different officials, so that if there is no performance on EPWP, it also affects the officials. But it will be much easier if we have the APP targets for each of the public bodies, which is something that we are working on, and the overall policy. Once we have that adopted, that would be able to help in that regard as well. I think just to say also that EPWP, the challenge we have is that it's complementary. EPWP is complementary to the rest of the economy. So sometimes when projects end, the participants may not have an opportunity to be absorbed by the mainstream economy. So it's something, as government gears up on the economy, we want to facilitate so that many of the participants are absorbed into the mainstream economy. Some of the municipalities are beginning to have databases, like the city of Swane, city of Cape Town as well. In Swane, they went through a big drive where they got people who want to participate on EPWP to register in a database. And then when they are going to implement on a project, they do a kind of lottery system, which is automated, so that they try to distribute the opportunities. But it's something that we want to spread across so that it's fair. It's done and adopted by many other municipalities. Indeed, the issue of the concurrent functions is a challenge. And if we have a way of enforcing if it later on becomes part of the bill or the act, it would help us. But yes, it is a challenge, and we're relying on the relationships we've built with different provinces and municipalities. Thank you, Chair.
Paul and Lindiwe, you have anything to add?
Thank you, Acting DG, honorable members, the Deputy Minister of the Department of Public Works, our Acting DG, the colleagues that I see are in the meeting beyond the EPWP branch. Good morning. Thank you very much, Honorable Hicklin, for your question around the NPOs. Before I can be direct about the response, is responding to the question which says, what is DPWI doing to ensure upskilling of defaulting NGOs or stroke NPOs? I need to clarify that indeed the DPWI, as we all know, implements the EPWP through the IDT. And as a result, we do take full accountability to ensure that those NPOs which participate in the EPWP via the implementing agent, IDP, do not default. But before I get there, so the broader scope of the NPO sector or the civil society organization sector, it, we know that it is the mandate of the Department of Social Development. And as such, sometimes the NPOs will default by not having an updated registration certificate, which is issued by the Department of Social Development upon the compliance of an NPO having submitted the required documentation, among which will be the IDs of the directors of the NPO, just to make it a legal entity. So we will then realize that the DSD has got a very critical role to help to prevent the defaulting of the NPOs. And then we will have other departments like your Department of Employment and Labor will have to, you know, provide that particular NPO with a letter of good standing, which then confirms that that NPO, as it employs people at ground level, do take care of those people by ensuring payments. First of all, they need to plan and budget and pay for the UIF of the people who are working with them, and as well as ensure that they pay the Department of Department of Labor the compensation of injury, I mean the compensation of injuries on duty, I mean on duty in respect of the people that are working for them. That is then regulated by the COID. So there is all of those, plus then the SARS, where now the NPOs have got to ensure that they are tax compliant by submitting the annual financial return to SARS. Now, this, the whole list of things I've just mentioned constitutes, requirements that if the NPOs default against, then they will not be able to, you know, to participate in the programs of government, whether they are implemented by the Department of Social Development, Department of Health, Department of whichever department is using NPOs to drive service delivery at ground level, or even by the Department of Public Works through its EPWP implementation, EPWP NPO implementation processes, which are carried out by the IDT. Now, it so happens, it has been mentioned that the Department of Public Works received funding to upskill. I'm just using this term because it came up as the question was being tabled by the Honorable Hicklin, to upskill the participants of the EPWP. The budget that we received from the DHEC is for technical upskilling. It's not for upskilling for purposes of helping the NPOs to be compliant to the things that I've just mentioned, which means then they will have been trained on financial management so that they are able develop and compile their own annual or financial report, and they are able to do anything that is going to help them to take themselves through the processes of adherence with the SARS. So we do not have that type of training from public work. But through our own coordination mechanism, we've got the national program management team, which is convinced by ourselves as public works, and at the provincial level, we've got the provincial management team as well in their respective nine provinces. These provinces, I see the message from Honorable Hicklin. These structures are made up of or there is representation from the Department of Social Development and the Department of Labor. We didn't manage to secure a representation from that. So it happens then at the time when the NPOs are being recruited for participation in the EPWP NPO program, they are subjected to due diligence, and they are requested to submit these documents like your SAS certificate and so on and so on. Where they do not comply, then we engage with them, and then we also involve the respective representatives from these departments in the coordination structure that I've just mentioned to provide the assistance. But IDT is always at the lead position. That helps them to pick up these NPOs and then redirect them to the relevant department so that they are assisted. And we normally give them a period of about 2 to 3 weeks so that they can correct their situation. And I just want to say we appreciate the question, Honorable, because then in the previous financial year and this outgoing one, we couldn't make the target of the NPOs that we had intended to work with, which was 350 NPOs, because of the same reason that the NPOs were non-compliant. In our context, we say they are non-compliant. They had defaulted on one or the other areas of, you know, of the past, the things that I've just mentioned. And so we've pushed hard until the point where we had saturated ourselves among those who had submitted the proposal to participate in the EPWP NPO program. So that's what we do. We intend moving forward to include in our implementation model. We are going to revise the NPO implementation model this coming financial year. So we intend, therefore, to include the training, the management capacity development so that we can get access, be able to utilize also the DHET funding, which we receive at the EPWP branch to fund the technical training, but we would like it to go beyond technical training, but management capacity development, so that these NPOs are able to undergo the necessary training and avert the default or potentials or possibilities for defaulting. Thank you very much, Honorable. I hope the question has been answered. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you very much, Paul. So our last speaker from EPWP Chairperson is Honorable Lindiwe Nkuna. Lindiwe.
Unmute, Lindiwe. Jim?
Lindiwe, are you there? Lindiwe, your camera is on, your mic is muted. Lindiwe? Chairperson, I think Lindiwe is having a problem. We'll continue. Chair, just to make one or two comments before I hand back to the Deputy Minister. That may not have been dealt with, or to compliment the input. Honorable Sivisa made a request for a response on the vacancy positions in the department. And I'd like to announce that there are 5 key DDG positions identified for immediate filling. And we have the position for DDG SCM and DDG IGR, where interviews will take place in the next 10 days. We have the positions for DDG EPWP, DDG Policy, and DDG Facilities Management. These have been advertised. The responses have been received. There's been a strong response from the public. And the interviews are expected to follow after shortlisting, which will take place also in the next 10 days. So we're making good progress there, Chairperson, through you. And then just to move on to 2 other comments, The chairperson made mention of the public works bill, which we are presenting tomorrow. And I want to concur with the chairperson in terms of enforceability. We have to look at the framework legislation that the Public Works Act or bill will present to us to look at mechanisms through which to enforce at the national level some of the imperatives of EPWP as a public employment program. And then finally, on the customized performance indicator, I'd like to just spend a moment on that, Chairperson. This is a very important intervention that we are seeking to introduce into the performance management system throughout government, commencing with the provinces. Because what this will do is it will bring about some kind of self-monitoring and self-enforcement of a lot of the EPWP imperatives, where the public bodies will have to report the work opportunities created on their annual performance plans, and this will of course be subjected to auditing by the Auditor General. And what it will also do is look at all aspects of the program, including the recruitment practices that give rise to the work opportunities reported. So it's a very fundamental intervention that we are making. We believe it's going to take time for the DPME and all the other stakeholders to accept and to introduce it on a gradual basis throughout the provinces and hopefully in time, even at the municipal level and other public bodies. But it's a fundamental intervention. At this point in time, the National Department of Public Works reports the work opportunities, and many of the adverse findings of the Auditor General at the public body level is reported against the National Department. So if we were to succeed at introducing this customized performance indicator, which is number of work opportunities reported by the relevant public body, I think we'll introduce a lot of diligence into the system, accompanied by auditing of the EPWP program by the Auditor General. So thank you very much, Chairperson. I think we've answered the questions. I'd like to hand over to the Deputy Minister. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Acting DG. Thank you very much, Chairperson. Mine is really to just emphasize on certain areas. Firstly, that as government and as a department, we take the work of the objectives of the EPWP quite seriously. And I think we have shared with the honorable members that the manner in which the program EPWP is viewed, not only in the country, but also internationally, as a measure to mitigate poverty, is held with high esteem, in that this program, for quite a number of years, and in 2019, we received an award from the World Future Council, working together with the IPU, the Inter-Parliamentary Union, as well as the UNDP, because of the manner in which the conceptualization and the drive behind the program is held. With the many challenges that we have been deliberating on, but the major one being the cause of the major one being the unenforceability of the guidelines. I think we have to some extent clarified the way forward as the department there, that we are looking at policy interventions that must deal with the human element, because it is not the policy that causes people to abuse it. It's not the intention. The fact that it is happening, Honorable Matebula, We've received petitions from communities. We've had interviews with people on the ground. We've seen it in some to some extent. The fact that the program is politically manipulated, and not only by one party, by most parties at local government level. That's a fact of life. It's happening. But we are then working to ensure that we deal with that human element, which creeps in into the application of the policy, such that it undermines the very objective of the policy. The objectives being to alleviate poverty, because poverty has no political party. Poverty is poverty across communities, across households. So one of the strongest elements that will be contained in both the bill as well as the policy will be to ensure that we limit that human element in influencing the policy in a negative manner, because we are all enjoined by our constitution to be ethical in our approach, to be honest, to be servants that are diligent, that ensure that there's fairness in what we do, there's justice in what we do. So that one we will leave no stone unturned. And as a department, we had already started dealing with this. On the 23rd of January last year, just fresh at the beginning of the year, we had a colloquium where we invited both provinces, municipalities, NGOs, all those role players in this space. I personally addressed that colloquium, and I emphasized in that colloquium the need for transparency, the need to stop abusing the policy as well as and the program, because of the sensitive nature that the program is as an interventionist program. So trying to work with all role players, there's what we call a carrot and stick approach. We did extend the carrot approach because we've spoken to all delegates from all provinces, all municipalities were in that colloquium. And we shared with them what we wanted to see happening. We clarified the guidelines as they stand, and we shared with them our intention, because also this is a program embedded amongst the people. And we therefore need to understand that it has also social implications if it is not driven with the kind of ethical behavior from the drivers as well as the participants. It has that impact that we need to safeguard. Lastly, Chair, one would want to indicate that we also need, as leadership, to understand the purpose of the program. Honorable Hickton puts it nicely and says it's a stepping stone, which means it's a helping hand. It's that hand that when you fall, you get to stand up. So it's a program that is envisaged to cushion the most vulnerable in society. Because if we can't do that, then the whole nation gets affected. And therefore, it takes the approach that half a loaf is better than no bread. It's that approach that when it comes to earnings, it's that approach that says, don't go to bed without something to eat. But we have over time grown to say that program must help us not only have a plate at home at bedtime, but it must help us empower ourselves as citizens to not only get employment, but also to create our own employment. These are the strategies that we are sharing with the team, the ideas which we are also appealing for from the side of the committee and the honorable members as well, because we believe this is a human interventionist program, which must be humane, and driving it and ensuring that people participate in a manner that is not individualistic, in a manner that is ethical, and in a manner that is acceptable to all. And therefore, those ideas that you have as committee members, we would love to hear, and hence our commitment to say, let's engage. Yes, you are right, Chair, on a quarterly basis, as you have initially suggested. And I believe when we come back, we shall be putting in front of the committee the kind of document that we have been working on, so that we all get to the grips of the issues, but also as we draft the public works bill, it also encompasses the importance of this program, and the do's and don'ts of the program become enforceable through our own Public Works Act. I think, Chair, with your permission, let me stop there. Thank you very much.
Thank you, SDM. Honourable members, I don't know whether are there any... okay, there is a hand, if Honourable Suwisa. Are there any follow-up questions? Is it Honourable Suwisa only who wants to do a follow-up? Because I can't see other hands. You are welcome, Honourable Mashele. We noted your apology that was presented earlier on. Are there any other members that wants to do follow-ups? Honourable members? Okay, over to you, Honourable Suwisa.
Thank you, Chair. I've got only one follow-up based on the response from, I'm not sure, I'm trying to find the lady's name who was making the one who presented the first time, pertaining the load, where is it, load versus ability to do work. Deputy Minister, what measures are you going to put in place? Because now we found, excluding the vacant post that the acting DG has already answered on. But now there's a challenge of, there's a lot of work that needs to be done, but there is no ability or lack of ability to do the work. what measures are you going to put in place to ensure that actually these guidelines and this program of EPWP actually become successful, because there's a lot of things that needs to be done. There's a lot of compliance that needs to happen. There's a lot of accountability that people need to be accounted for. What is the department going to do about that? And then pertaining also to the letters that have been written and no response, it also raises a concern as to there are urgent matters and yet there's no response. It also takes us back to what I've been saying all along, that there's a lack of accountability. There's a lot of loopholes that are there. There's no proper follow-up that's going to be done. What is going to be done to ensure that load versus ability, or versus workload versus compliance and ability and skills within the department, specifically with respect to the program of EPWP? Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Honorable Suweta. Over to you, DM and your team, on this follow-up question.
Thank you, Honorable Chairperson. You see, when in a department you have a leadership vacuum, which has been an issue in this program, in that, yes, there have been people who were acting, but we know that once somebody is acting, how others view and how others respond, there is that element of a bit of undermining at times. And therefore, it becomes critical for us to ensure that we have appointed a DDG in that position. And there are people below, but it's just that they are not enough. Now, once you have the DDG, it's going to be her or his duty to ensure that the staff below is available and therefore is employed. But for me, what is critical for a program of this nature is agility. And when I talk about agility, it is the ability to network and interact with the various role players. There's a district development model, and we've discussed this, that platform also must be used to ensure that our coordination with the various role players is up and is attended to where there are gaps and where there are poor performances. They are reported and engaged and attended to at the right time, at the right place. So for the department to think that the issue of DDM is for the IGR units of the department becomes a challenge, which we have engaged upon. And now everybody understands that as a department, we must be able to drive, especially these programs that talk to communities. We must use those platforms that are available to us for us to drive our message, for us to capacitate the people, because this requires a two-way understanding. The people on the ground must understand the do's and don'ts. The leadership must understand the do's and don'ts. And at that level, that is where we get closest to the sphere that interacts directly with the people through the DDM. And therefore, I think we have some understanding there. but also it will be part of the policy itself, the issue of coordination, the issue of easing the information flow for agents and what's the word I'm looking for? Prompt response. Because at times you find that what delays the kind of responses to these problems is that they will be left unattended for long, because this one waits for the response to the one on top, and this one, and that chain of accountability, it takes long from a municipality to get to the department at a public works level, for example. Yet, if we ensure that in all the DDMs, we have reps, we allocate our own staff. There is staff there, more than about 200 people or so. But how we utilize them becomes also another matter of importance. So we do need to have people whom we will deploy to all the districts to ensure that there is ease of information on projects on the ground, there's ease of reporting, and when there's an anomaly taking place, it is nipped on the bud at that time, because National has a rep in that district where this anomaly is taking place. So reorganizing ourselves in terms of our work plans becomes a critical issue here. Thank you, Chair. If Acting DG would want to add, I think he can add, but or CJ, if you want to add, you can add. Thank you.
Thank you, DM. I'm good on my side. I don't know if the team want to say anything. CJ, do you guys want to say something?
Yes, ADG. I think we as EPWP recognize that the work is a lot, but we do have strengths, because we now recently had our strategic planning session. And one of the strengths in the EPWP is that we've had people that are committed to the program. Some people have been in the program since 2004. Not that they're not marketable, but and they don't want to leave, but they are committed to the process. I am actually sitting with a situation where one of our staff members received now a promotion in another government department, and is simply saying to me, "I've been in this program since 2011. It's an amazing program, and it's you need to be passionate about the poor to be working here." And so the strength is the team. This morning at 7 a.m., we met with all our provinces already to ask the question that there was a certain program that needs assistance in terms of verifying information on the ground. And so we then, as a branch, is able to recognize that when there's a need in one area, that we then redeploy staff to be able to assist where the weakness is. Now, that is a very special arrangement to be having when staff could possibly say to you, "But I've got a job description and I'm going to stick to it." So we've got we've got staff that understand that there is a public wage bill and there's constraints. But what DM says, it's also important for us to even look at those job descriptions and ask, are they appropriate? Even then get to a point whereby we assign a person per district. That is happening in certain provinces, like, for example, the Northwest. If there's a problem, I know who's assigned to a certain district. In Limpopo, I know who's assigned to a certain district. And so the Western Cape too. So I think one can improve on that particular aspects. But the beauty is staff that are committed, staff that are willing and know their work, and staff that are willing to be able to assist where we have challenges and shortcoming in a particular financial year. And then obviously the need for us to be able to go ahead and adjust JDs where we find that we're moving permanently into a newer direction, and to be able to allow for that. But we are we're in a good position given the staff that we have and the nature and the qualifications and the experience that people have. So I think it's important to recognize that the unit is that's a one positive within our branch at the moment. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you, Chairperson, through you, if I could just conclude on that. First of all, there's a proposal that's been made to the Minister and Deputy Minister to do a skills audit in the organization. I think we also mentioned it in our engagement with the committee last week, to do some kind of assessment of the capacity and the skills at our disposal and the demands of the job throughout the organization, including in EPWP. So hopefully that will bear some fruit down the line in terms of looking at particular gaps in our capacity and where there's structural realignment, we can respond to it. But of a more immediate interest, Chair, I'd like to also mention that in the last 6 months that I've been required to act, we've had the DDG position being vacant, and then one has had to rely on this management structure in the meeting. We've spoken today, and the experience has also been, you know, similar to what CJ has articulated with respect to the staff and the passion that they have for this program. One has also seen to the top management level, the commitment, the cooperation, and, you know, the ease with which one is said to engage them. So we've also had a positive experience there. So hopefully we will fill that vacancy in the next few weeks and, you know, take this program forward. Thank you so much.
Thank you, DM. Thank you, acting DJ, SJ, and to the team for your detailed explanation on the issues raised by honorable members and the response that was requested by Honorable August on the policy guiding EPWP. Before we let you move or release you from the meeting, I just want to raise this. Concerning this policy, I think DM is correct. One, the department is a coordinating structure. It cannot then, when it talks on the DDM, shift it to a certain directorate in that. It has to be something that you breathe near a pillar in the department, because you are the one who are going to champion all that, especially when it links to department. But on this issue, EPWP, as all the members have said, it talks to the most vulnerable. It talks to those who don't have special skills. It talks to the majority of the population of South Africa. So a clear policy that will benefit the majority, it will really assist. One of the key drivers on the reconstruction of the economy that was mentioned by President is that of creating jobs. This is also another vehicle that can be utilized, especially by this department. So we dare not fail the majority that have made us to be the members in this Augusta House, which is the Parliament of South Africa. With those few words, DM, we hope that you have noted the issues that we have raised as the committee, and the fact that the Public Works Act also comes in here in this matter of EPWP. And lastly, DM and the team, we hope that we will get the updates that we have constantly requested when you bring the quarterly reports to us. about EPWP. Those detailed updates that we want as the portfolio committee, we have requested, and even last year we have requested them, and we still have not yet received them. We request that when you bring in the quarterly report, we will, especially of the last quarter, we will get them, and they will be clear so that no one has confusion. At least everyone knows what is happening and where. With those words, TM and the team, and Honorable August, we then we are releasing you now to leave the meeting so that as the committee we deal with our annual report, which is the next item in terms of our agenda. Thank you, Honorable August, for bringing in this petition. And thank you, the GM, Minister in Absentia, and your team for explaining what was not clear. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you very much, Honorable Chair and Honorable Members, for the opportunity. All the best in your meeting further. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Chairperson, members.
Ms. Martinez?
Can you fly thank to you very much, Chairperson.
Okay, thank you.
I've just flighted the report over to be visible now.
Yes, yeah, so who is going to present?
Can I please? I will present the chair.
Okay.
But my colleague, my colleague Shweb will also assist where there is a need. All right, Honorable Chairperson, this before the committee is the annual report of the Portfolio Committee for the term, reporting on the term April 2020 until March 2021. So in March we go as far as we currently are, as we know that the recess is going to commence in the next week or so. So on the report, Honorable Chairperson, we focus on the key highlights, reflection of the committee program for the year, and on whether the objectives of such programs were achieved. We also focus on the areas upon which the committee focused on during the 2020-21 parliamentary term, key areas for future work, key challenges that emerged, and the recommendations thereof. So Chair, for this report, we have not crafted any recommendations per se, so that because we wanted to make space for the committee to just craft their own recommendations as we go ahead with the report, based on the engagements that there will be. On the introduction, Chair, I'm not going to delve much into this because it basically speaks to the department and the entities upon which the committee is responsible, well, which the committee is responsible for conducting oversight on. 1.2, the functions of the committee, which is to pass legislation, monitor performance of the department, and facilitate public participation in issues relating to oversight and legislation. So on 1.3, Honorable Chair, we look at the method of the work of the committee. That is how we have been doing our work in the year under review. The committee employs a dual-focused oversight methodology. On the one hand, we focus on collecting material evidence from project sites, and on the other, we focus on a report-based documentary oversight. So as and when we go in the sites, we come back and draft a report, which then gets communicated with or rather disseminated to the department for them to look into their recommendations. So the first place emphasizes collection of material evidence from visits to project sites, meetings and other oversight activities. It goes so far as engaging stakeholders to use evidence as agenda setting items to interrogate concrete challenges that require attention. So what we do is, Honorable Chair, is the committee would have noticed that whenever we go on either an oversight visit or perhaps we call the department to report on its quarterly performance or yearly performance for that matter, and based on the budget review and recommendations report, we therefore request the department to come and update us in terms of progress regarding our recommendations. And some of those recommendations stemming from those reports become our agenda items for the meetings. The purpose of this report, Chair, is to provide an account of the work of the PC on PWI during the 2020-21 term and to assess key outstanding issues pertaining to the oversight and legislative program of the DPWI and its entities. The report provides an overview of the activities that the committee undertook during the year under review, the outcome of key activities, as well as any challenges that emerged, and this I've already alluded to as my opening remarks while I was getting into the report. Looking at the statistics, Honourable Chairperson, this thing keeps jumping up and down. Looking at the key statistics, Chairperson, the table provides an overview of the number of meetings held, legislation and international agreements processed, as well as the number of oversight trips undertaken, study tours, and all of those for the period under review. In the main, we held 6 meetings on the first term, 10 meetings on the second term, 3 meetings on the third term, and then 15 meetings on the fourth term. So we did a lot of work on the fourth term, and that gives us a total of 34 meetings for the whole year. Legislation processed is the expropriation bill, which we started processing on the fourth term because it was only tabled by the department in October 2020. Oversight trips and that we undertook. On the third term, we took a trip to Bay Bridge. Yes, we took a trip to Bay Bridge, which is what we are accounting for the third term. On the fourth term, we undertook a trip to Kosi Bay, in which we looked at the Jersey Barrier Wall. And the last trip that we took as a committee last year was the oversight visit to parliamentary villages, in which we visited Acacia and Pelican Parks. So that gives us a total of 3 oversight visits that we undertook as the portfolio committee. There were no study tours that we undertook, and there were no international agreements that we processed. There were also no statutory appointments that we processed, no interventions. There's one petition that we processed last year, which was the fourth term, and I'm putting this on the fourth term because the fourth term then in this instance covers everything from October, November last year until the end of March this year. So today we were dealing with the petition, that's why it's accounted for here. Other referrals from the speaker or the chairpersons. We received a referral on the same ATC, if my memory serves me right. I think on the same ATC upon which we received the petition, there was a referral by the House Chairperson, by the Speaker of the National Assembly, in which the committee was one of those committees that were identified to rather check on the work that was done by the departments on in terms of complying with the supply chain management processes while processing the issue of PPEs and COVID-19 related matters. So this is one. And the other one following that would have been a matter that was referred to the committee by the Office of the House Chairperson, when which the committee was selected as one of the committees that needs to have a look at or participate rather in the pool of committees that would be processing a strategy, or rather form a task team on the strategy in terms of curbing the gender-based violence and the femicide issue that we faced with as a country. So the stakeholders of the committee are the DPWI, public works entities, AGRIMA, IDT, CBE, and CIDB, the Built Environment Professional Councils, EXA, etc., the Auditor General, as well as the SIU. Uh, briefings or public hearings. The Department of Public Works briefed the committee on the expropriation bill on 24 November 2020. The committee then will conduct public hearings during the period 8 April to 20 June 2021. And the legislation, as I've already alluded to, is the expropriation bill, which was tabled by the DPWI and referred to the committee on an ATC that was published on the 14th of October last year. So dwelling much into the oversight trips that were undertaken then, as we saw in the statistics, the first oversight visit that we undertook was on the 4th to the 6th of September 2020. We visited Bay Bridge in Limpopo to gather first-hand knowledge of the Bay Bridge border post fence project, which comprises of the 40-kilometer fence constructed by the DPWI along the borderline between the two countries, Zimbabwe and South Africa. So on this table, honorable members, you'll notice that on the recommendations and responses to recommendations as well as follow-up issues, we could not, because of the bulk of information, we couldn't utilize the table. In turn, what we have done was to compile all that information, the recommendations, the responses, as well as follow-up issues, on one separate document, which is referred to as Annex A, which was also shared with the honorable members as a supplementary document to this one. So for that, a report was adopted on the 7th of October, 2020. The following one was 9-11 October, when we went to Costa Bay to gather insight into the maintenance of the fencing of patrol roads on the border between RSA and Mozambique in Costa Bay, which is termed the Jersey Barrier Wall. The report was adopted on the 21st of October 2020. The third and last one for the term was an oversight visit, which we undertook on the 4th of November to parliamentary villages to gather insight into the work of the prestige program of the DPWI and PMTE, while focusing on issues like security, the condition of the houses, as well as the renovation and maintenance work that was done by the department. Okay, there were no study tours undertaken. There were no international agreements, as I've already reported. Obligations that were conferred on the committee by legislation. This is where we deal with the recommendations of the BRRR, Budgetary Review and Recommendations Report, to the Portfolio Committee. So we then outline the recommendations as the committee had crafted while it was reporting on the BRRR. So we reported that the recruitment project should get the correct capacity within the department and PMT to ensure clean governance compliance with the regulatory framework and the PFMA. The recruitment project to get the correctly capacitated personnel appointed to the PMG across the level, the 11 regional offices, to manage the immovable asset register. A full report on efforts to address the leadership vacuum that continues to threaten the stability and consistency that's required in monitoring compliance and reporting regime that is required for the department to effect its mandate. And 10.4, a report on the change management to strengthen the weaknesses in the control, compliance and risk environment of the department and PMTE. I think all these four recommendations, honorable members, are generally what always comes up in each and every meeting. And I earlier noted as well that members were still saying that the department will still not function well if the correct, and this is what the DM has also alluded to, that if the correct positions are not filled in this in leadership vacuum, it does have a tendency to disturb the process flow, and in turn that may give the department actually a bad audit. A comprehensive report on the processes undertaken by RELS to ensure the completeness of the IAR, with specific reference to physical verification. And the other one is the progress with the project to get phase one of the telecom towers completed, so that the 10 leases for SAPS can be released and saving can be realized. 10.7, a report on efforts of the construction policy research and regulation to strengthen the public works mandate by getting the public works bill completed within the sixth administration. This is one of the areas that always come up in every meeting, honourable members. A report on the work that the construction policy research and doing with the CIDB and CBE to amend the Construction Industry and Professional Built Environment Act to drive transformation in the construction and built environment professional terrains. The committee also recommended that a full report on developments to recoup the payments made to the contractor for Bay Bridge project, as well as to address the alleged malpractice that took place related to state funerals for the period under review. A full report on outcomes of the investigative process from 2010-11 to 2015-16 that was further extended to cover the period 2015-16 to 2019-20 related to matters that include state funerals and state functions in the Prestige Program. Another one would have been a comprehensive report on negotiations with the National Treasury and client departments to address the collection of outstanding debt from client departments. 10.12, a comprehensive report on the full cost and expenditure to date of the Enterprise Resource Plan, the rollout of modules on Akibas and SAGE, and capacitation of staff. 13, a report of the under expenditure in the construction projects management and efforts to mitigate challenges experienced with contractors and client departments. Well, if I may just allude to one point the members out to, one challenge that is usually experienced is the lack of information that comes through. But that's one of the challenges that we've outlined somewhere in the report as well. The summary of outstanding issues relating to the department or entities that the committee has been grappling with, it is the provision of information on time upon request by the portfolio committee. Well, sometimes you find that the department comes and briefs the committee, and then the committee requests a written document in terms of laying out all the responses that the committee would have wanted, or rather supplementary information, which would be based on what the department had presented. But at times we battle with getting that information. Number 12, honourable members, I'm not going to repeat. We've just dealt with the petition. Matters referred to by the Speaker of the National Assembly, which is the second special report of the AG on the financial management of government's COVID-19 initiatives, which was referred to the committee on 11 December 2020, which is what I referred to earlier on as being part of the ATC that also consisted of the petition that we've just processed. Other matters referred to by the House Chair. The House Chair is earlier, as I said earlier on, identified the committee as one of the committees that will play a critical role in the Parliamentary Oversight Framework on the NSP on GBVF on the memorandum dated 19 January 2021. The committee received a briefing from the DPWI on progress to complete the MOA with provinces and to ensure the expeditious opening of shelters for GBVF survivors on the 3rd of March 2021. On recommendations, honourable members, you'll see it's highlighted in yellow. We deliberately did not put any recommendations because we wanted the portfolio committee to then, in this meeting, be able to give us their views in terms of what the recommendations could or should be, so that we can take them going forward. On the committee strategic plan, Chairperson, I see honourable Hicklin has raised her hand. I'm not sure whether it's on something that I've just said now, or I don't know, honourable chair.
It's, thank you, through you, chair. No, it's just one thing, Nola. On page 11, you've got 8.13 instead of 10.13. That is just a really small thing you can correct straight away. Sorry, chair.
Okay, let me rather deal with it after when I'm done with the report. Thank you for pointing that out. Honourable Chairperson, on 17, the committee has no formal strat plan in place. This is due to the changes in the parliamentary program and COVID-19 related changes, because at some point we had the strat plan in our program. However, we never got to it because the country then went on national shutdown. And so, yeah, so the changes to the parliamentary program also emerged. So we then said we envisaged to hold a session during the first quarter of 2021-22, which is the second quarter of 2021. I'm not sure if we should stick to this, given the fact that now the public hearings have been approved. So I think we may or not be able to tackle the issue of the strat plan. However, the committee will give their guidance on this one. Then the report also consists of the master attendance list. We have also attached it as one of the documents that we sent to the honourable members. That is the list of the attendance of the honourable members in all of our committee meetings. As part of the report, and lastly, we also are required to attach the financial statement on expenditure for 2020-21. We have also attached that one. And I'm not sure if, Chairperson, you would like me to go through to the annexure that has the recommendations of oversight visits and the responses thereof, or because of time, with the assumption that members have already read through the documents because they were sent early last week. So we can just carry on and perhaps get the views of the committee in this regard. I'll pause it there, Chair. I'm not sure if Shoaib wants to add anything through you, Chair.
Okay. Any additions, Shoaib?
No, Chair. I'll come in once members have any specific requests. Thank you, Chair.
Honourable members, can we interact with this report? And to remember, this is our report, honourable members. Honourable Hicklin, honourable Graham Murray. I think everyone must speak. Honourable Matebula, honourable Jobo, honourable Sinisa, honourable Franz Kalvik, honourable Mashele. This is our report. There are annexures. Okay. Over to you.
Thank you, Chair. I'll kick off. Nola, as I said, on page 11, it's 12.13. There you go. I would just like to look at page 6. If you wouldn't mind scrolling up, Nola, where it spoke about reports and responses to reports. I think we need to really and truly emphasize that the reports that get given to us need to be more comprehensive and timeous responses to requests for information. We do not get timeous responses. They are always considerably delayed. And they are often generalized and incomplete. And I think that is a recommendation that I think we need to make very, very strongly. That the reports that we get need to answer the questions that we ask. They can't just be nebulous nothings. And very often we have an issue where the timeframes are not adhered to and the information requested is not provided to us. I have a question, and I'm quite prepared to accept that it could be my ignorance, because technically it was not a petition, but the submission from the Free State Agricultural Society that we received in the beginning of this a couple of weeks ago, would that fall out of the ambit of the petitions because it's on the expropriation bill? Is it something completely separate? Other than that, all the recommendations that you have put forward, I agree to. I think they are excellent. I would just like to make more specific reference to the IAR that I don't believe is being taken seriously enough by this department. That is my input. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Honourable Graham Murray. Honourable Graham Murray. I suspect network challenges. Honourable Matebula, even if we endorse the report, Honourable Members, because this is our report. Yes, Honourable Matebula?
Yes. Thank you very much. Thank you very much. Well, I wish to support the report as it is, Chair. I have nothing to say other than that.
Thank you, Honourable Matebula. Honourable Mjobo. Honourable Mjobo. Network is dealing with us today. Honourable Siwisa.
Thank you, Chair. Mine would be when it comes to the commendations. I see the 16.1 responses and time frames. But also, Honourable Hickley is using the F word. The response, even their responses, I have a problem with their responses that they don't adhere. I think it falls under the time frames that even if we do give them a time frame that they, and their responses are not in detail. So maybe we should say responses are not in detail and not adhere to the time frames. Their responses must be in detail and they must adhere to the time frames that have been stipulated by the committee. And also, Honourable Chair, maybe another, let me make an example with the meeting that we had last week whereby they gave us a report of the first, and I think it's the third quarter or something, whereby they gave us a summary. Maybe also a recommendation is that they must do an attachment, which we can read at our leisure time. Because it's only to say, like, for an example, the prestige report, there was nothing. They only told us there was prestige projects, but there was nothing in detail. Maybe we should also make it as a recommendation, even if they give us a summary. But can they attach the actual report so that we should be able to read at our leisure time? Because 3 hours won't be enough to go through each and every page. I don't know how it can be captured there. Thank you.
Thank you, Honourable Siwisa, Honourable Van Skalvig.
Thank you, Chairperson. Honourable Matebula, move for the adoption of the report. I want to second it. Safe to say, Chairperson, under the responses, I think it's important when I look at the responses by the ministry in terms of parliamentary questions, it's a short response, but it's been backed up by annexures. I think that will also assist us if we can get our feedback in that form, because then it's going to give us a better description and explanatory notes. I've requested previously that a report should be, even though the department present us with a presentation, they should also attach an explanatory report to give like a narrative report, and that will assist us to go into the detail of the relevant areas and give us more meat to the
presentations that's been given. Because, Chairperson, when I look at the explanations or how broad the annexures covers the issues in terms of parliamentary questions, then it seems as if the portfolio committee is somehow not informed enough, and that will assist us if we can have the issues broadened like that. Thank you very much, Chair.
Thank you, Honourable Van Schalkwyk. Honourable Mashele.
Chair, thank you for affording me an opportunity to speak. Greetings to Honourable Members. I think the report is a true reflection of what we have went through. And I agree with the colleagues who are raising an issue on the issue of the time frame, as well as their responses. We should find a way, Chair, of dealing with how they respond to us. At times, you can see that even when we are seated with the mayor and the portfolio committee, the department just respond for the mere sake of responding. And we should be able to, I know that does not reside here, but we should be able to find a way on how we make them to account, unlike them coming to us for PR exercise. Thank you, Chairperson.
Thank you, Honourable Mashele. I don't know if this, the two members that I had asked but didn't respond, I don't know whether they're still in there. Honourable Graham?
I'm back, yes. I fell off a couple of times, so it's driving me nuts. So I've typed it up, but just in the meantime, just on page 2, on the report framework, in the second paragraph, when we speak about the minister, it says he, if you could just put that to she. So that's just the one correction. And then I just want two recommendations. The one is that we get a weekly updated list of our recommendations, almost like so that we can keep track. I can't always remember when things are due and whatever, so it's very hard to track and monitor. And I know that we've got a tracking document that Nola puts together. So maybe if that could be shared with the committee, maybe when she sends out that the next week's documents, if she could include that. And then I'd also like one of our recommendations to be an acknowledgement that we as a committee acknowledge the incredibly hard work the incredible hard work that has been done by our staff in supporting us this year. It's been tough for us, but I think the staff have had an even tougher time because they've still had to coordinate everything through lockdown, the expropriation bill, etc. And I know it's taken its toll on some people's health, and I know that they are exhausted and really, really under the whip. I mean, Nola's sending out emails to us on Sunday nights and late at night, and I honestly do believe that as a committee we need to acknowledge that we have an incredible support staff who make us all look good. So if we could maybe put that into our recommendations, that there is a written acknowledgement of the work done by our committee staff. Thank you.
Thank you, Honourable Graham Murray. Honourable Jobo, is she back here, ne? Honourable Jobo? Honourable Jobo, she was saying it's tough in Durban. Okay. Honourable Members, the report is the culmination of what we have gone through the year 2020-2021 as this committee, and it indicates what we have done interacting with the department. But I think just one or few comments that have been raised. The comment raised by Honourable Mashele on the way the department is dealing with issues that are raised to them, I think it has been raised even by other Honourable Members. The time it responds to us if we want something, for example, the issue that we're dealing with today, the issue of EPWP policy, the issue of detailed updates that we have requested several times, that it has to take someone who is petitioning them
for the department to come to us and tell us that they're still working on that. How many times have we asked for the, and I think it is this committee that stopped the department in bringing in another white paper on the public works bill. We told them, no, we don't want any white paper now. We want you to work on the two white papers that we have. They were going to bring us a third white paper on the Public Works Act. So it shows that there are serious challenges in the department. But I think when we came in NOLA in 2019, we were getting detailed reports or presentations, and then it will be that detailed report that has so many pages and then the slides which are in the PowerPoint form. I think they must bring that to us. We don't want them to present the slides when they are presenting, but that information that is detailed in the form of a report, we want that. I don't know whether you still do remember that, members. We didn't get slides when we came in. They would give us a report, and then there would be this summary, which is part of the PowerPoint presentation that they will be doing to us. Now they just bring in that PowerPoint presentation without that information, in which we can get the details of all these things that are happening in the department. And I agree with you, when we request something, they take time in doing that, and they would even apologize, saying that, no, in fact, they don't take us serious. I agree with those comrades, honorable members, that are saying that. But in the report, it is clear, and it said that we wanted to do our strategic planning. When we came in, we were stopped by the by a house chair. We have been stopped several times. I don't know when we will be able to do the strategic planning of this portfolio committee, because when we wanted to do that, we would be stopped, all the time, but we hope that we will be able to do that, so that we plan properly for this term as the committee. Honorable Matebula moved for the adoption of this report with the amendments and the corrections. Can I get a seconder?
I second it, Chair.
Sorry, Chair, may I ask a question that my question wasn't answered about the submission from the Free State? Is that not regarded as a petition? It's just a point of clarity for me. Can someone just answer that for me, please?
The submission that you received, Honorable Hicklin, it was not a petition. It talked on the expropriation bill.